All set. Thank you.
Here we go. Action. Hey, everybody. I'm Jim Alcoholic. It's good to see everybody. Happy Father's Day. I actually hadn't thought of that, Jim, when I agreed to do this. And the reason that it's significant is that the river that runs through me obviously runs through my dad. And as a son and as a father myself, there's kind of the father story, right? The recovery father story that I've been thinking a little bit about. So I actually want to start with him, because my dad was in Normandy, and he was wounded and came back with two Purple Hearts and a Bronze Star, and married my mother. He was on the cover of the Jayhawker magazine. He was this handsome returning World War II hero, and my mom was this beautiful co-ed at KU, and they got married. The first 9 months of their marriage, my dad was in the hospital on a morphine drip. And, I came along as the fifth kid. And by the time I came along, my dad went to AA. So the first year I was alive was the year that he went to Alcoholics Anonymous in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And as we know, you don't come to AA on a winning streak, right? So that really was the beginning of a very long chronic alcoholic cycle for my dad and for my family, and really for the first 10 years of my life. And if my dad's story was in the big book, it would have been nearly lost all. But he had five kids in tow and a wife who basically took care of everybody. And my dad went from being the cover boy of the magazine to the one who would slip out of the motel in the morning and leave us all there to go forage for food. And the reason that that's important, in June of this year, is that the programming that I got early in my life was from a returning veteran who had massive PTSD, who had alcoholism and drug addiction. And my relationship to the world was formed in survival. It was formed in not knowing where we were going to live. It was formed by not knowing any moment whether or not there was going to be violence, physical violence, emotional abuse. And so that programming prepared me for life living from motel to motel, from volatile outburst to volatile outburst, to watching the people in my life who I love the most be, brutalized and neglected. And this isn't just sad story time. It's how do you maintain sobriety in a world where you transition from being programmed to survive, having your basic instincts, as Bill talks about in the 12 and 12, tuned up to the point where my hypervigilance, my awareness of my environment and how dangerous it was, how do you transition that into living like a normal life on a normal street with normal people? And I'm here to tell you that that's a long, long, long road. I didn't tell you what my sobriety date is. I got sober and clean on the 24th of September, 1976. So to save you the math, that's 47 years. And there's a line, not a line, there's an instruction. There's an instruction in the fear inventory. So when we come out of the resentment inventory and we sort of have our behavior in our, our feelings, our relationship to our world laid out in front of us, we're asked to look at our fear. And it says that, the fabric of our existence was shot through with it. And certainly for me, growing up in a very scary world that I didn't know was scary, I thought it was a normal world, the fabric of my existence was shot through with it. And it asks some very specific questions, and it asks me to write it down. And I write this stuff down in, in June of 2024, and I have been for a long time. And that question it asks me, it says, we review our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper. We ask ourselves why we had them. So I do that. I write them down. And then it asks me another question, and it says, do I have this fear because self-reliance failed me? And when I went through this recently, I was looking at the various characters that had shown up in my life that were my new self-reliant characters that was going to manage the fear, was going to take away the danger, was going to make me be okay. And one of those early characters that showed up, I stumbled onto accidentally. And that was when I said something outrageous and did something outrageous in school. And instead of being ignored and ostracized, all of a sudden, I was like the funniest guy in class. Everybody just started talking to me. The girls started smiling at me. And, that first character that emerged was the disruptive class clown, the one that got a lot of positive attention from being a huge pain in the ass. That one morphed into the one who knew that in order to not get his ass kicked in a very dangerous school that I went to in Denver. In fact, at one point, I was in the John and I looked over and the guy pissing next to me had a gun in his pants. This is like back in the day. So it's and so in order to get out of class, I went and told the assistant principal that there's a guy running around here with a pistol. And so I said, I don't want them to know there's gangs in this school. I don't want them to know that I ratted this guy out. And sure enough, the assistant principal brings the guy in and says, is this the guy? Yeah. That's the guy with the gun. Thank you very much. So I managed to make it home that night. And I told my big brother, who's 5 years older than I am, who my dad would beat on my big brother would beat on me. My big brother offered to come and escort me home from school the next day because I was truly afraid that I was going to get my ass kicked. And my brother pulls up in a 57 Chevy with three other guys in the car from high school. So they're big, badass dudes. And I'm so relieved because now I have my big brother taking care of me. Well, this gives you a sense of what that relationship was like. My brother said, okay, start walking home. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, just start walking home. I was bait. And they would follow me slowly in this 57 Chevy. And after several blocks, when nobody attacked me and they couldn't jump out of the car with baseball bats, he calls me over to the car and he says, okay, he says, you see those guys over there? I go, yeah. He goes, go pick a fight with them. And so I could either get my ass kicked by these guys in the car or go take my chances with the guys on the corner. So I went to the guys on the corner. I started talking shit to them. And, they just looked past my shoulder and saw these four big dudes in a 57 Chevy, and they let it pass. That's an important story for me today because even my protectors, were putting me out there in a position of danger. So I really didn't know anything other than sort of constant danger. And so the character arrived when I was 13 years old. The one who was going to manage well was going to manage well by drinking and getting high. That character, man, it hit the jackpot. I got three big old cherries hit that jackpot because number one, I got oblivion from this constant anxiety that I was in. Number two, I actually felt good. It made me feel good. And the third cherry was I had a whole host of friends. This is something I could be successful at. I wasn't successful at school. I wasn't successful in sports. But by God, this was the magic combination. And you guys have heard that over and over again in AA talks. So that character, it would have been awesome if that character wasn't an alcoholic. It would have been great if that guy didn't have the disease of alcoholism. So at 13 years old, I got in trouble and I had resolved to quit for the rest of my life. And 3 months later, I'm standing out in front of a drugstore getting somebody to buy a bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill and another bottle of Annie Green Springs Apple, this or that. And I would chug one of them to get as shit-faced as I could, as fast as I could. And I experienced that failure of being able to control it. And I didn't particularly enjoy it either. Now, how do you be an alcoholic at 13 or 14? When I was 15, I had a paper route, and this paper route, you had to pay a bill every month. Now, this all may seem like super young, but these characteristics are pure, unadulterated alcoholism. Number one, I wanted to quit and I couldn't. Number two, when I smoked dope, when I drank, what would happen to me is I would want more and I would get pulled down into this black hole. And number three, I had some idea of where alcoholism took you, which at this point was not particularly useful to me because I thought alcoholics were my dad. I thought alcoholics were the ones that, put their family up in the Bugs Bunny Motel on East Colfax in Denver. I thought that's what an alcoholic was. So at 15 years old, I decide that I'm going to pull off an insurance scam. And I banged my head on the cement to get a lump to prove that I had been hit over the head and robbed. I got taken off to the hospital. I'm laying in the Denver General Hospital Gun and Knife Club in emergency. And the doctor informs us, but my eyes are closed. He informs my dad that I have a fractured skull. So I had fractured my own skull. And then he said that oftentimes amnesia accompanies such a head wound, which was like, thank you, God. Now I can get amnesia and I don't have to report what actually happened to me. The reason this is an important moment for me is that I'm in pediatric intensive care for the next 3 days. And I'm in pediatric intensive care because I'm not old enough to be in big boy hospital. Because you don't get to go to big boy intensive care hospital until you're 16 years old. And once again, I laid in that hospital bed faking amnesia, not, pretending I didn't know who the president was when they'd asked me those questions. And I resolved that I am not going to do this anymore because I knew that I got here because of drinking and drugging. I'm 15 years old. 2 days out of the hospital, I'm off and running again. So this ability, this insanity that precedes the first drink or the first drug was already well established. but I didn't know that's what it was. So I got sent to Alateen when I was 16 years old to get clean and sober because it has the word Allah in it and teen. And I was exposed to the first time in my life to a recovery program. And it made a huge, huge impact on my life. Second step through the 12 step works for regular citizens. I got to tell you, it was the first time in my life I started actually passing from one grade to the next. And I stayed clean and sober for about 2 years from the time I was 16 to the time I was 18. But I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I just thought I had a problem with drugs and alcohol. And I learned a very valuable lesson. And that lesson was if I don't attend to my spiritual growth through involvement with the 12 steps, involvement with the fellowship, that I will pick up. And I did. And from the time I was 18 years old to the time I was 20 years old, I had probably quit, I don't know, dozen, 20, 30, 50 times for the rest of my life because I hated the experience of being drunk and high. I hated it. Because I'd actually been exposed to a quality of life that was non-alcoholic craziness. And my bottom came when I was 20 years old. I was sitting on the couch in my roommate and I's house. It was 4 days into a 7 day I'm quit for the rest of my life moment. I even used the big book at this point. At this point, I'm reading the big book. I'm reading the words on the pages. And it talks about how nobody likes to admit they're real alcoholics. Nobody likes to admit they're bodily and mentally different from their fellows. Well, I could relate to that. And as I sat there on that couch, 4 days into my 7 day process of trying to be clean and sober, and I was loaded again, the italicized paragraph that said the alcoholic cannot bring into his consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the humiliation of even a week or a month ago. He is without defense against the first drink. I knew that paragraph, and that paragraph exploded in my head. And I realized that there wasn't anything I could do to stop the thing that was killing me. And I was completely 100% at the mercy of my alcoholism. I had no negotiating power. And the primal, visceral, biological feeling of being, of having my life threatened, of looking at death, was one I had experienced a couple of years before when I was closing a small grocery store in downtown Denver, and two guys came in, and I was emptying the trash. We had closed the store, and I was walking through the back, and there's these two guys there, and there's my boss, and the first guy sticks a blue steel revolver in my stomach, and he tells me to hold it, and I don't know if you've ever had blue steel revolver stuck in your stomach with somebody who may or may not be a killer. And this guy turned out to be because he took the gun out of my stomach and he murdered my boss standing next to me. That very, very primal experience of having absolutely no power over your life or your death, was seared into my cells. And as I sat there on that couch when I was 20 years old, and I knew that there was nothing I could bring in my consciousness, there was nothing I could do to stop and stay stopped. That was my moment, right? That was the parting of the curtains. That's when the negotiation stopped. And that was September of 1976. And when that happened, I knew that I was completely unequipped to stay sober. And I knew that I had to get somebody else's brain to help me stay sober. That was my first sponsor. I couldn't tell a good thought from a bad thought because a good thought or a bad thought, an enlightened thought or a spiritual thought or an angry thought or any kind of thought would wind me up back where I started in Warsaw. So I checked all the time, every day, multiple times a day with my sponsor of whether or not what I was thinking was okay. Was it right? And I was very, very fortunate. You know, I've heard you guys talk over the years about certain, you know, influential people that came out of Denver AA in the 70s. And I was very fortunate to fall in with these guys. They were no bullshit, very grounded in the 12 steps in the big book. And very early on in my recovery, I was introduced to a process of doing the 12 steps, of working through the 12 steps by going through the book with a group of guys and starting with the appendices and getting a new book, which, by the way, this is my new 2024 book. This is the Set Aside Prayer in Action, right? This book was completely blank 3 months ago. It's got a lot in it today. But that was 47 years ago. And the process was really simple. And that is read the words on the page. And when it says write, you write. When it says pray, you pray. And you find a group of people that are interested in actually doing the instructions in the 12 steps on an annual basis. And you put that group of people together. And guess what? They wrote it down. So you don't actually need an interpreter because they wrote it down. And you just surrender to the process and you just do the work. And the very first time I did that, like I said, was back in the day. And I was taught once you've done that, once you have the instructions, once you've been through this work, it's your job to find a group of people that want to go through the 12 steps, whether they've been sober a week or they've been sober 10 years or they've been sober 30 years. And if they're interested, get the book and you go through the work. And I've done that really every year for the past 47 years. And in fact, right after this meeting, I'm going into the 2024 version of it where we're covering off steps 8 and 9. So, you know, here I am delivered to you guys at 20 years old. I'm not educated. I have a nervous system in a biology and a programming that essentially has me fit for survival. And I'm delivered into a world where I need to be a whole functional member of society in relationships, in healthy growing relationships, and I don't know shit about this. I do not, guys. I don't mean to overstate it, but it was ground minus five to me. It was not an easy process. But I had a process and I had people in my life that would counsel me and help me. You know, apropos to Father's Day, I met my daughter's I met my daughter's m mother. Actually, she doesn't call her mother. I'll explain that in a second. But I met this girl at, I played in a band And we were playing at an Employee X concert. An Employee X was an ex-convict halfway house that was run by Don Pritz. And Don would have us come play these gigs at Employee X. And I was up on stage. I was playing as a percussionist and a harmonica player, nice combination. And I was playing Black Magic Woman. And out there in the distance was this cute little blonde. And that cute little blonde really became like my first girlfriend because I really didn't have any practice at relationships before I got sober. And I married that cute little blonde, that first girlfriend. And 8 years later, we have a 3-year-old beautiful little girl, and she tells me that she no longer wants to be a mother and she no longer wants to be a wife, and she leaves. So I'm in one of my first major crises of recovery, right? And, as we're taught in the third step, when we make a deal in the third step, and me being a good, blues harp player and a blues musician, I grew up on the myth of Robert Johnson, who's at the crossroads, right? And Robert Johnson makes a deal with the devil that you teach me to play the guitar, you make me Johnny B. Goode, and I'll sell you my soul, right? Well, I made a version of that in. In my life, when I took the third step, and that was, if you take my alcoholism away, and if you take this bondage of self away, and if you help me transform into somebody that you build and you do, then my job is going to be a difficulty processor. I am going to get handed difficulties in my life. I'm going to be handed unsurmountable, insurmountable challenges in my life. And my job henceforth is to surrender to it and to let it unfold so I can demonstrate, bear witness to your power and your love and your way of life. And this entire program for me is this practicing of principles in all my affairs, which is a way of life. And the reason I believe that I have not had to pick up, considering the fact that I am an alcoholic, that I have not had to pick up any drugs, any gummies, any cookies, any NyQuil, any alcohol, any pills for 47 and a half years isn't because I'm awesome and isn't because I've done all kinds of work year in, year out on relieving the bondage of self, going from a survival kid, an uneducated survival kid, to somebody who is connected in my relationship to my wife, who is, I'm retired from a business that I worked at for 35 years, 37 years. I started as a computer programmer. And after 37 years, I left as the boss. I was the leader of leaders who were the leaders of leaders. I traveled all over the world. You don't get from where I was to where I am because of my ninja skills at the 12 steps, right? I believe you get there through that third step prayer, that decision to quit playing God because it doesn't work. And then I'm handed this unbelievable technology. I'm a geek. I'm a tech geek, okay? I'm delivering this unbelievable technology. And this technology, by executing this program, these lines of code on a regular daily basis, put me more and more in contact with a power greater than myself and help me be present in my life in this day. So my daughter called me this morning. She's now 41 years old. I got the distinct and unbelievable privilege to be a father and a mother to this kid. And I remarried when she was 15. So this poor woman that I remarried, who I've been married to now for 25 years, married a guy with a 15-year-old daughter. And if you don't think that's courageous, especially when she's had daddy her whole life to herself. She happened to have a 6-year-old boy. Now, this 6-year-old boy came into my life when I was 6 years old, was when the wheels came off in my family. It's when the motels started. It's when the abuse really went to a high level. And I got to parent a 6-year-old boy to a grown man with a loving mother and a loving family living in the same freaking house the entire time, right? I got to experience. Can't make this stuff up. That young fellow is now th 33 years old. So I could go in through the execution of the 12 steps. Trust me, I could. I'd love to. I'd like to break it all down and tell you how I think about it and how I do it, the insights that I've gotten in 2024, going through a virgin big book with a group of people. But I'm not, because I really want to open it up on Father's Day and hear from you guys. For a bottle and a hangover. We're given the keys to the kingdom. And I want to honor my father. This morning in my meditation, I was thinking about this 22-year-old guy who comes back from Germany in December. Two Purple Hearts, Bronze Star from saving his guys from some ordnance that had caught on fire. His disease, his alcoholism. He got sober when I was 10. He's the one that brought me to AA. He's the one that demonstrated, God's power, God's love, God's way of life. And I'm telling you, I didn't go down easy. Because I had a very complicated relationship with my old man. And likewise, for my daughter and my son, I have lived a life that has been consistently opening up and deepening to God as I understand him through the program, through these the code of these 12 steps. And have shifted the burden of generational disease into language of the heart. So I'm going to shut up. We got 15 minutes left, and I want to celebrate Father's Day because we're lucky, lucky, blessed men. That's all. Thanks.